pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three begins right now. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with me, your show host. You text me, I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Still to come on the program, State Senator Chris Elliott. Our returning champion will be with us here in about a half hour, so stick around for that. I'm going to roll through some text. Oh, but back to the Mobile Chamber of Commerce bumper sticker. You sent me a picture of it. I remember that bridge campaign. I also remember this. Like, there was some concern about a bridge like that interfering with Mobile Skyline. There was some, like, pushback on the city council. Is that ringing a bell for anybody? No. I was living in Washington, D.C. I think... maybe this was when George Talbot, who I got to know when I was here the first time around in my very young journalism career. Hey, a bunch of us are going to be up at up on Capitol Hill today lobbying for this bridge. I think we did some stories. Maybe for Yellowhammer or Philaniap. I can't remember who I was working for at the time. Wasn't my main job. See, 2015 would have been still at Breitbart. Still at Breitbart now, by the way. But I remember that. Yeah, I think you had a bunch of, I think you had the mayor there. Maybe some city councilmen and or county commissioners. Talking about it. And where are we today? Well, we're not much closer on it than we were back then. Fire Dog writes, Randy. Why has a high-powered, deep-pocketed lawyer attempted to sue China? Hasn't a high-powered, deep-pocketed lawyer attempted to sue China over COVID, or have they attempted to, but the deep state has blocked it and prevented as such? I think this has happened, but remember, it took like a decade before the lawsuit on 9/11 was allowed to proceed against, did they sue the Saudi government? Fired on. Judaism doesn't believe that women are cattle. Sharia law does. I'm named Texter. You're spot on about the Fox Newsification of politics when you and Butcher talk about Alabama political headlines and the Texters are angry about Sharia law. But I think this is like a different discussion we're having on this show about Sharia law. Not so much, man, we got to do something about that Sharia law. More such like, why is this the thing we're talking about? It's a more nuanced discussion. No one is pro-Sharia law on the right, okay? Nobody. Nobody likes... I mean, there are no... there's no Sharia practitioners for Trump group online, at least that I'm aware of. We all agree on this. Sharia is not good. The question for me becomes this. Is it a threat to our society? Jason, is Bradley Byrd finally resigning due to his residency issues? It's the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce. I actually know where Congressman Byrd lives. I've seen him. I was driving by a couple of years ago, so I'm putting out Christmas decorations. I've seen him around Fairhope parades and other things. But I would classify Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce, and if you put Mobile Area, I would put his residence in that Mobile Area. Because here's the deal. You could go down to the bay not far from his house and see the Mobile skyline. That's kind of silly. Chad, my favorite part was when they proposed bike lanes on the new bridge. Well, this is what they do, though, the walking trail or whatever, it checks a box for these green ideas. If you're on a bicycle trip and you want to get across the bay, what do you have to do? I guess you could go over the Cochrane Bridge. Those of you who are bikers, have you ever tried to cross the Mobile Bay, the Delta? What do? You can't go through the tunnel, obviously. Just call a taxi cab, throw your bike in the trunk, and go across. I assume this is something that's come up in the past. I remember the bike lanes, though, Chad. And they came at a great expense, was really. One more text here out of Jeff. Yes, there were a couple of groups that were opposed to it. One was concerned about it casting a shadow over downtown, and others, other was people in the maritime industry. And the bridge that they were wanting to build was like capable of allowing the largest cruise ship in the world to go under it. Come on, guys. We have a cruise terminal, but we don't need the capacity for the Princess Anne or whatever it is. You see this? A little sports ball discussion here. But the WNBA, and the Caitlin Clark, like, throat punch or whatever that was. One game suspension. They just don't like Caitlin Clark in this league. I'm like kind of going through some headlines here. Boomer Esiason calls on Caitlin Clark to leave the WNBA. I think there's petty jealousy, and she's a straight white basketball player, and she's not being treated with any sort of respect whatsoever. People in Indiana are filling up that stadium to go see her play. They're not going to see anything else. She is kind of the Tiger Woods of her genre. I don't get it. I think it is petty jealousy. She gets all the endorsements. She toughs it out. She doesn't complain. But in other leagues where you know who the star player in the league is, and you may not like Caitlin Clark being the star, but she is, they protect those players. They protect LeBron James. They protected Tom Brady for years. I just, the culture, this is like, why am I talking about this? It's very emblematic of the left culture here. It's, we're told we had to be accepting of a very bland sport, and we had to embrace it, that we have some kind of civic duty here to watch NBA game, WNBA games. That this is, it's on the public to, for equality reasons. And then you had to endure this. I find that to be a contradicting message. When what we're told are the virtues of the WNBA, and then see what actually happens on the court. Sorry for my minor digression there. Joe writes, there was complaints about perpetual shade. Businesses didn't want it overhead. Yeah, and when that, I mean, but where the bridge, what businesses were going to be impacted? Mike, do you think the $3.5 billion price tag for the entire project is Bayway included? Because I'd bet you a bill it's just for the bridge portion. Yeah, I think that price, by the time it's all said and done, it'll be way north of $5 billion. Well, they keep adding on to it. And John Cooper, the ALDOT director, doesn't seem to be willing to try to, like, find ways to lower the cost. He has taken these highway standards as if they are gospel. And there's no way to go and get relief from the obligatory bike trail on the bridge or the height requirements for the 1,000-year flood. And he's just rolling with it. Jim, sure you get it. She's white. I don't think it's that at all. I mean, white, maybe race has something to do with it. And maybe even sexuality has something to do with it. But I think she's come in, and I don't watch enough to know that if she is the superstar of that league. But I do know this. When I'm watching TV of other sporting events, and they have a pitch person out there, a female athlete, it's her. She is getting the endorsement deals. She is selling product. Angel Reese isn't selling anything. Caitlin Clark is. It's the same reason you see Peyton Manning and Eli Manning on everything, or now lately Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce. There's just something marketable about her. And I think that's part of it. Unnamed texter, wow, a lady sports ball detour. Must be a slow news day, Captain Teach. No, I was just looking up at my screens here. I always have one on ESPN. And that's what they were talking about. And then Fox has really done a lot about it. Fox News. I've seen that throughout the morning like 4 or 5 times now. So it's a lady sports ball detour, but it is in the news. It is a topic of discussion in mainstream news. Mike, I'm saying that the $3.5 billion simply for the bridge, and it's been capped at that with the contractor. Yeah, I think so. I don't know do they know what they're going to do with the Bayway. So we'll assume it's a 6-lane bridge, 3 in each direction. Then you get to the Bayway, you're going to have a bottleneck. So if anything, the 6 lanes, at least the 3 lanes going in one direction, had to be done. You could get away with it westbound, 2 lanes across the Bayway into Mobile, and then have it widen there right at the eastern shore of the Mobile River, I suppose. I think you've got to go 6 lanes going eastbound at least to the Daphne exit, if not further. I mean, I think the Buc-ee's probably eventually is what they got to do. A widening project for I-10. That should be cheap and easy to do, but somehow in this state, they try to reinvent the wheel every single time. By the way, guys, those of you who drive the West Alabama corridor are now able to bypass the grand old city of Linden. I know, what a triumph there over adversity. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Chris Elliott, my state senator, will join us here in just a few minutes, so stay tuned for that. Let's see here. Programming note. coming up on Monday's show, we'll have Jennifer Fiddler, my state lawmaker, House member, Dale Jackson, WVNN and Yellowhammer News, and former State Senator Dick Brubaker. Tried to get him on today, but we couldn't make it work, but we will get him on Monday. Looking forward to that. It's always like one of the favorite guests that we have on the program, so that's coming up on Monday's show. Just a few odds and ends here. The Supreme Court decision yesterday, and it's gone out of the news. It's off the radar, so that tells you what you need to know about it. But Trump immigration policy, big wins. I think these are important wins. I think it's as many as easy we could get against this lawfare apparatus in this country. These federal judges who are abusing their office because they don't like Donald Trump. Lifetime appointments, nothing to lose. Become a folk hero in your neck of the woods. Slap some kind of restraining order on. We got our own lawfare in Alabama, and we had to fight that all the way to the Supreme Court. It's just not a very efficient way to do it. But look, this is I was thinking about this, and this is how it's going to have to be. That if you're going to play every lawfare card you can because you have Trump derangement syndrome, and you're going to force the Supreme Court to take a position, that's going to be the law of the land. It's not going to be vague. It's not going to be nebulous. You're going to be stuck with this unless the Supreme Court overturns a previous decision. And that, to be honest, does not happen every day. So essentially what you're doing, and when they play the lawfare game, it may not immediately help Trump or help the situation, but years from now, if we have a Democrat president who wants to reinstate this asylum policy, which was just sort of a backdoor end around the skirt American law, immigration law, to get more immigrants inside the country, they're going to abuse it. Then you're going to, when a president comes along and wants to stop that, and then this could apply to anything, and you take him to court and a lower court judge says, no, you can't do that, knowing damn well that he can. You take it to the Supreme Court. The next president doesn't have to listen to what a lower court judge says now. They want the law on their side. So the lawfare is annoying and it's tedious, but now we have, because of lawfare, states once now have the freedom to restrict abortions. We now can control our own destiny on congressional maps. Sure, you may get a different court someday. It's not going to happen tomorrow. You could even think if Democrats win, they're going to pack the Supreme Court, which is, I think, going to be very difficult. It's different. When Roosevelt threatened to pack the Supreme Court, he had numbers. He had Democrats lined up behind him. He was immensely popular. He had the political capital to do some of that. The next Democrat's not going to be that. The country's divided. It's in a much different place than it was in the last century. We haven't had a president. I mean, maybe George Bush for a little while after 9/11. But maybe going back to Clinton or Reagan, where a solid majority felt good about. The country's just divided. And with that division, it's just going to make things like giving statehood to Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia that much harder. You want to end a filibuster? Do you want to do that? Do you think the Senate's going to give up that power, that institution? These senators are going to diminish their power by weakening the filibuster? I don't think so. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Somebody take me home through those Alabama pines. Living on the road, my friend.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday afternoon, Friday afternoon. Way, I am getting ahead of myself here. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, I'll get this one in real quick. D.I. Texter writes, the president does what he wants when the courts rule against him. The Dems will do the same when they are in charge. Okay, if you say so. Joining us now on the line, he is our returning champion. We do this every Friday about this time with some limited exceptions throughout the summer. But State Senator Chris Elliott joins us on the line. Senator, how are you?
I am doing well. It's a beautiful day in South Alabama. A couple rainstorms here and there, but other than that, pretty day. Looking forward to a good weekend.
Hey, I know what I wanted to talk to you about. Is there anything the state of Alabama could do that you think would meet the muster of the federal constitution to force transparency on these third party PACs operating out of state?
Oh, that's a good question. And the answer to that is maybe. But we have to be careful, and I think you've got some, pretty recent Supreme Court decisions on campaign finance laws that make it pretty clear that, money is speech and it is protected. And so, do I like what happened in the last election cycle and all of this kind of out-of-state money that was uncoordinated in nature coming into the state? No. Do I think we can prohibit it? No, I don't think we can constitutionally. And so the question is, how do you handle that? What do you do with it? I will use my race as an example. There was a bunch of money spent in my race that was uncoordinated, right? I had no idea it was coming, when it was coming, what the topic was going to be. It didn't ever come to me or to my campaign. This out-of-state entity, usually a nonprofit, purchased ad time on radio stations, TV stations, or whatever, and wrote and aired an ad that they developed without any coordination from the campaign that they paid for to be, to be broadcast. What am I as a candidate supposed to do with that? Is that supposed to be something that I report? How would I even know what that is? Is somebody out of state spending that money in my race or any other's race? How would we require them to report it? Is all questions we need to look at. You just kind of, it's real easy to say, hey, they need to follow these campaign finance laws and they need to make sure they do that. It's a little bit more complicated when you start getting into the nuts and bolts of it and just how that happens.
Well, I mean, first off, if I do this, I go to Georgia and open up a P.O. box and just start mailing out mailers, what do you do, send a state trooper to come and get me? So it's that. But so the argument becomes this. Well, no one's saying they can't do that. We just insist that we have more transparency. And I don't think you could do that either, because who's to say if for whatever reason Jeff Poore wanted to endorse a candidate? I don't endorse candidates, but let's say I did. And I did it on the radio. And the state of Alabama comes knocking at my door wanting to see who was paying me for that endorsement or whatever it may be. I find that to be, I think that's something that's prohibitive and it's a stipulation on free speech.
And that's where I agree with you. I think you can pass, and Alabama does this all the time, we can pass a law we want to, but I think it's going to run into some very obvious constitutional issues and some very recent Supreme Court decisions that are going to get the law struck down. And so I too am in favor of transparency. And I think that one of the good things about Alabama's campaign finance law is that we are very transparent. If you give me money, I've got to report where it came from. And then I've got to turn around and report when and how I spent it. And on top of that, as we get closer to elections and those types of expenditures could be more impactful, your reporting time frame gets really short, right? You get into monthly reports and then weekly reports and then daily reports and all of those types of things. And I think that's one of the strengths of Alabama's campaign finance laws. The problem is when you have these uncoordinated expenditures and they're from out of state, where does that report go? How do you make that report? You require the out-of-state entity to make a report to the Secretary of State's office, but in what does he, is it an in-kind contribution? I don't want that on my report. It's not something that the campaign coordinated. Yeah. How do you do that? And so I don't know what the mechanics look like to gain that transparency. And I think that's something we need to look at. But I don't know that we're going to be able to do it. And I don't know, I want to be careful if we go down that path to make sure we don't run afoul of the Constitution.
Yeah, because this is not what we need to be dabbling in. I get it. I'm certainly not a fan of sports gambling or anything, but you know what? We have a freedom of association, a freedom of expression, a freedom of speech in this country. And this is the system we've agreed to live in, and people can exploit it however they want. That's their right.
Where do you stop, right? To your example, right? You have somebody out there on Facebook paying for ads that's boosting something that they decided they were going to endorse. Well, is that an expenditure that needs to somehow or another be tied to my campaign
and
reported back to me? And so, exactly. And so I tend to agree with you. It's just how does that work? And I don't think there's a good solution to that problem.
And look, campaigns are different. I mean, you want to run for office. You give up some of this. You accept the rules. These are the terms of holding high office or seeking high office in this state under our system. But then when it becomes separate from that effort, from what you have control over, Senator, then I don't think the state has anything to say about it.
Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head with that right there. When it becomes separate from something you have control over, that's an important distinction, because how do you ask a candidate to try to control, report, or even own, right? Take ownership of something that by definition they have no control over whatsoever. I do think you've got a lot of candidates that were unsuccessful that are seeking to point to this as the reason that they weren't successful. I also think you've got some members that are nervous, understandably, about the proliferation of this type of funding and what that means for their next race. And so you're seeing these discussions. But this is where it becomes important, you know, get your principles together before you go start writing some legislation and figure out what's important to me. Is money speech? You know, how are we going to do this, and how are we going to, you know, if we're going to do something? And I think it's going to be very difficult to achieve what a lot of folks are clamoring for right now.
Well, the other thing is, if you don't like it, if this is something you oppose, if you don't like it, if they're doing it on your behalf or against you, speak out about it. Talk about it.
Sure.
And say, look, we know what you want out of this. You keep doing this, and you're not going to get this. We know it takes a little homework to figure it out. But you tell these people, and you tell them publicly, I don't want you sending out mailers in my district 5 times a week, okay? And if you keep this up, I'm going to be a no vote on whatever it is you want. I mean, I don't know, but there's ways to combat this that don't involve an act of the Alabama legislature.
Right. And so I completely agree with you. You saw a number of candidates in leadership, or even I did it, put out, hey, these are not my mailers. This is not me doing this. Pay no attention to that. It does require a level of sophistication on the voter standpoint, though, to look at this and say, this says paid for by somebody else. I need to give it its due weight and not get on Facebook and say, I'm not voting for this guy because a picture of him showed up 10 times in my mailbox today. I get that it's annoying, but understand that if that's what you're making your decision, if you're basing your decision on being manipulated by some out-of-state interest for or against, that's on you.
Well, unfortunately, but that's the world we live in. And, you know, it's just another burden on a candidate, I suppose, to have to combat whatever position they are, you know, for or against these mailers. But if that's the case, like, don't run for office if you don't like it that much. This is the way the game's got to be played in the system that we have agreed upon.
Well, and it's the way that it's always been played. This is not something that is new. And we've seen this in federal elections for years and years and years. So this is not something that's necessarily new. It's just new at the state level, and it's new with this type of volume of funding. And those two things are alarming people. But like I said, get your principals together before you start addressing project or topics like this, because otherwise you'll go down a route that could cause you more problems and cause the state more problems than if you hadn't.
Well, it just bothers me. And we had Todd Stacey on, and I mean, so I kind of pushed him on this, and well, I'm not a lawyer. It's like, okay, but do you see the problem here? Well, let's just pass a law and then see what happens, which sometimes happens in Alabama. I mean, you know, pass laws and we have to wait and see what happens. But I think on this one, where if you're just looking at your conservative ideals and you believe in a constitutional republic with our Bill of Rights, you really got to be careful here.
Well, and obviously I agree with you on that, and I'm not a favor of let's pass a law and see what happens. That's not a good way to legislate, and not something I would be in favor of. We have to be way more careful, especially when we're dealing with something like this. You know, we only see what happens every 4 years or so, right? That's as often as we're going to see, you know, get that tested, and it takes a while to turn a ship. And I think, again, a lot of this is on the voters and the candidates to clearly effectively communicate the candidate's message, and for the voters to be able to discern between the candidate's message and the outside interest group's message. And I have enough faith in the voters to be able to do that, whether that's a positive message about me, too much messaging about me, or even a negative message about me. The voters have got to look and see what the origin of that is. And in most of these instances, Jeff, we were able to point to where the money was coming from. I mean, your reporting and 1819's reporting did just that. You knew which was Alpha money. You knew which was sports betting money. You knew, you could tell what it was.
Well, and you know, people complained about the law being violated. And I think there were complaints being filed, but like, obviously, nothing came of it. It just continued. I just, if we're going to throw a Hail Mary punch or whatever on something, and we're going to say, hey, let's pass it, see what happens, let's do it on something besides bailers and third party PACs. Do it on your abortion on congressional lines or whatever, and let's test the courts there. On this, I don't think this is something that I really would want the attorney general arguing before a federal court.
Well, and I'll take it one step further. I think that the bigger issue is not the amount of money. It was the fairly gratuitous way it was spent. And I think it got to the point by these outside interest groups. I think it got to the point where it was detrimental to the candidate that they purported to, you know, want to be helping. And so I think what you see is a total change in the next election cycle. People want to see these mailers. And they don't want to see the text messages. And so what are we going to see? You know, automated text messages and automated, you know, these mailers. I think those things are going to go away, and you're going to have to find other ways to interact with the voter than that, because I think those are old, outdated methods. And I think people were as frustrated about the methods as they were about the you know, where the money came from.
I'll tell you something. I may have stolen this, but I think this whole exercise, this cycle, was a flex to show this is what we're capable of.
And I agree. And not just for the members that were on the ballot, right? It was for the members that weren't on the ballot.
Hey, you know, you play ball with us or see what we can do here.
I think you're exactly right in that, and I've said so before, and I think that's what they're doing. I mean, you're in the legislature, and to the extent you think that way, right? Hey, I need to vote this certain way so that I keep somebody off my back next election cycle. That's not how I think. I vote for what I think's right, and then every 4 years go to the voters and try to explain it. And so far, so good. But there are going to be members that look at it and go, ooh, if I don't vote this way, then that particular entity is going to come after me, and they'll spend $1 million in my race, and they may beat me. But again, that's been going on forever, right? You look at what Club for Both Growth does on the federal level. I mean, they've been very effective with it over the years. They'll do it again. And so this is not a new thing.
Well, I mean, such an expenditure at a state level legislative race is a little unprecedented. But, you know, something else, though, it's not like these guys were resoundingly successful this cycle. And I think they hurt. They hurt some of the – I mean – you know, if we're looking at it from a gambling standpoint, it wasn't like either side, pro or anti-gambling, had a great night last month.
No, I don't necessarily think so. And I think the anti-gambling, you know, efforts were not just necessarily they weren't just necessarily anti-gambling. There were folks that were anti-gambling who also had other issues that they were pushing.
Like pro or anti-vax, and you throw in you know, just a bunch of different things, right?
Exactly. And so you're going to, you know, you'll continue to see those interest groups be active. And listen, that's their purpose, right? That's just supposed to do.
That's what they do, yes. And they had the right to do that. You may not like what they do and how they do it, but we have adjudicated this.
We have indeed. And I can tell you almost universally, I do not like the messaging of people who disagree with me. Right. But I will absolutely defend their right to say.
Yeah. I mean, I just think this is the world we live in. And you want to be in that office. You got to handle it. Senator, we got to get out of here. But we always appreciate your time. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks for having me. Enjoy your weekend.
State Senator Chris Elliott there. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I've nothing to do. It's good to see you. I must go. I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes and my ragged rebel flag flies high above it all. Popping in the wind like an angry cannonball. Now the walls of history are cold and still, but they still smell the powder burning, and they probably always will.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Friday morning. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile, so you need to stay tuned for that. A named texter, we need those Supreme Court wins to restrict immigration. 62% of foreign-born voters in New York City voted for Mamdani. They were Asian voters from communist countries of Vietnam and China. We need to allow people into our country who are not acclimated to socialism. Well, but I would say this, though. Maybe that's true, but also the people who voted for in these congressional elections Tuesday night, who voted for so-called Democrat socialists are bona fide New Yorkers. Like, forget about it. You know, like they embrace this. This is what they voted for. It's crazy to me, but it is. What it is, this is an ideology that is popular among a lot of urbanites. It's a communal lifestyle they live in a major city. I mean, it's sort of what they think, the way they think about it. And I think the politics reflect that. They've just gotten a little more progressive or a little more radical here in the last 10 years or so. Coming up Monday on the program, we'll have Jennifer Fiddler, state lawmaker here from my neck of the woods, Silver Hill to be precise, but she is my state lawmaker. Del Jackson, WVNN, Yellowhammer News. I'm sure we'll be with us. And then back by popular demand, former state senator Dick Brubaker. We'll get his reaction to elections and other things that have gone on. Has a very dour view sometimes of what's going on in politics. And I mean, we spent all morning on campaign finance. And I can't get over that. The state of Alabama, if they do this, and I think there is an appetite too, they don't have that kind of power. It's just not conservative. That you don't like these flyers. And look, they're not benefiting the most conservative candidates. It's the deep pockets. It's the big mules. It's those types who benefit. They have but it's a freedom of association. And if they want to support a candidate, then they can. One more from DEI texter here. The far right calls anything they don't like socialism. It's lost its effect. But the people who ran in this office that won on Tuesday night, DEI texter, called themselves socialist. Now you, for some reason, think that this is some kind of pejorative being waylaid on candidates that you identify with, that we're just throwing that socialism term around, but this is not the case at all. They call themselves socialist. That's insane. Basically, this is my response to socialist radicalization. I'm worried about the radicalization that of the youth. Can you address the issues radicalizing them? No, that's dangerous. I just want to be stop being radical. Can you at least take responsibility for the situation? No, it's young people who are wrong. Well, thank you for that. I got to get out of here. I'll try to do better on Monday. Sorry, Phyllis. I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
This is...